Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor Earnings Results for the Third Quarter Ended September 30th, 2014 conference call. My name is Maija, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to introduce your host for today, Mr. James Simms and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and welcome to Vicor Corporation's conference call for the third quarter ended September 30th, 2014. I'm Jamie Simms, CFO, and here with me in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and Dick Nagel, Chief Accounting Officer. Today, we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the third quarter. This press release is available on the investor relations page of our website, www.vicorpower.com. We also filed a Form 8-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay will be available beginning at midnight tonight through November 5th, 2014. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, followed by the passcode 617-239-40. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will shortly be available on the IR page of our website. I will start this afternoon's discussion with a review of our financial performance for the third quarter and the first nine months, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor recorded a net loss for the third quarter of $3.7 million, representing a net loss rounded up to $0.10 per share on revenue of $58.4 million. For the second quarter of 2014, we recorded a net loss of $4.8 million, or $0.13 per share, on revenue of $53.4 million. For the first nine months of 2014, we recorded a net loss of $13.9 million on revenue of $165 million, while for the first nine months of 2013, we recorded a net loss of $10.6 million on revenue of $143.9 million. This increase in revenue represents year-over-year growth of 14.7%, with all business units showing improvement. Consolidated revenue for the third quarter rose 9.4% sequentially, reflecting expected shifts in the makeup of total revenue. Turns volume increased slightly, but reflecting the overall increase in shipments, fell to 38.1% of total shipments for the quarter from 40.5% for the second quarter, but well within the range of recent turns levels. The brick business unit recorded a 4% sequential decrease in revenue, reflecting the expected end of a robust custom program. Our legacy modules business was stable for the quarter. VI Chip's revenue increased almost $5.8 million, more than doubling sequentially, reflecting the increased bookings of the prior quarter. As we have previously discussed, a major customer in the data center space had been transitioning to our second-generation solution for powering Intel server motherboards. The solution consists of a chip BTM from VI Chip and a SiP PRM from Picor, replacing a solution comprised of earlier generation VI Chip, BTM, and PRM modules. The shipments of Picor SiPs also doubled for the quarter, with total Picor revenue coming in at $2.5 million, a record high. Recognized distribution revenue rose approximately 22% as long underway design-in efforts by our stocking distributors have started to yield results. Concluding on consolidated revenue, international revenue rose 9%, reflecting the substantial increase in VI chip and PiCore shipments to Asian contract manufacturers. However, BBU exports fell by 5.9%, as strength in China was offset by slower activity in certain regions of Europe. VICOR's consolidated gross margin for Q3 improved both on an absolute and a relative basis, reflecting the production efficiencies afforded by the higher volumes of VI chip production, as well as the larger contribution of PiCore with its fabless model to the mix. Q3 gross margin as a percentage of sales was 43.7% compared to 42.5% for Q2. Turning to Q3 operating expenses, recurring research and development, marketing and sales, and general administrative expenses came in as expected. However, the quarter was characterized by sustained high levels of legal fees associated with preparation for trial, now expected to begin in January 2015, as well as charges we recorded for severance and related costs associated with the wind down of manufacturing in Sunnyvale, California, totaling approximately $2 million. While total operating expenses increased, as reported, by 7.2% sequentially, excluding legal fees and severance charges, total operating expenses would have declined 2.4% and operating income would have been positive. Total headcount was 1,043 at September 30th, up from 1,019 as of June 30th. At the end of the third quarter of 2013, a year ago, total headcount stood at 993. The sequential increase for the quarter was largely made up of new temporary hires in manufacturing. Calculation of our tax benefit for Q3 was uncharacteristically straightforward, reflecting the release of certain tax reserves to the satisfactory completion of an IRS audit. We recorded a benefit of $510,000. As discussed during previous calls, we fully reserved against our deferred tax assets at year-end 2013, the consequence being a near-term inability to create additional tax benefits from additional pre-tax losses we incur. Until we return to sustained profitability, we will continue to report tax provisions accordingly. Turning to new orders, third quarter bookings increased 14% sequentially. Total one-year backlog stood at $52.5 million at the end of Q3 versus $45.7 million at the end of Q2, increasing 15% sequentially, with 67% of this backlog scheduled for shipment during Q4. Cash flow from operations for Q3, despite the net loss, totaled $3.7 million, up from Q2's $2.3 million, reflecting the $2 million non-cash severance charge recorded and a positive swing in working capital. Note this severance will be paid out over the coming quarters on a biweekly basis beginning in 2015 based on the length of an employee's service with us. Capital expenditures for the quarter declined slightly to $1.4 million from Q2's level of $1.9 million, reflecting the completion of certain projects associated with chip production. Turning to our consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with days sales falling to 43 days from the prior quarter's 47 days. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter declined slightly, with annualized turnover climbing to 4.35 times, representing another new high. There were no meaningful changes to either AR or inventory reserves. Cash and short-term investments stood at $53.7 million at the end of the quarter, up from $51.4 million at the end of Q2. This figure excludes investment securities with a par value of $6.0 million carried on our balance sheet at an estimated fair value of $5 million, representing roughly 83% of par value. After the close of the quarter, we did receive an additional redemption at par value of $500,000. Turning to our expectations for the coming quarter, we are forecasting a small sequential increase in revenue. On a consolidated basis, we expect Q4 operating expenses to be lower, in part because we do not anticipate any further severance accruals. In 2015, we look forward to a substantial reduction in legal fees following trial, scheduled for January, of IP claims by a competitor and of our counterclaims for misappropriation of confidential information and tortious interference. Now I'll turn the call over to Patrizio.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie stated, Q3 was characterized by sustained order flow for our new 48-volt factorized power components, higher shipments of these products, and margin improvement associated with higher volumes. As I said last quarter, Vicor has begun a ramp in volume of chips and SiPs for board-level applications, notably for 48-volt applications powering Intel processors. Our initial focus is on opportunities in data centers, but we expect meaningful design activity for other applications, including processor and memory rails, to accelerate through 2015. We're well along with applications for wireless infrastructure and defense electronics and are devoting resources to securing design wins in automotive, heavy equipment, aerospace, and microgrids. At the upcoming Electronica trade show, we will be unveiling our first chip-based PFM, flanked by other novel front-end and next-generation brick products using BCM and DCM chips. In previous communications, I've highlighted our complementary product strategy comprised of chassis mount or front-end systems and board-level component solutions. Depending on the customer requirements, the front-end system can be AC to DC or DC to DC. To address both, Vicor will be introducing a range of sophisticated product platforms incorporating chips with internally and mechanically adept packages that offer class-leading performance and cost-effectiveness. Based on the ease of use of these front-end devices, which we christened VIAs, short for Vicor Integrated Adapters, we expect a rapid uptake. We also expect that the combination of VIAs at the chassis level with chips and SiPs at the board level will truly differentiate Vicor as a provider of comprehensive integrated solutions offering the highest performance at very compelling cents per watt metrics. Our novel front end and next generation brick products should revitalize our brick business unit with its mass customization model based on a highly efficient and flexible manufacturing process. Vicor has developed sophisticated online design and configuration tools for use with our new product platforms to enable customers to benefit from the same mass customization capability that continues to differentiate our legacy bricks. While the BBU's traditional bricks remain sturdy contributors to Vicor's performance, customers will soon be offered new solutions with the state-of-the-art look and feel, offering substantial improvement in efficiency, power density, and scalability, unmatched by legacy bricks and similar offerings from Vicor's competitors. VIA front-end systems, chip modules, and SiP regulators, along with complementary product offerings, will give Vicor a product range unequal in the industry, fully implementing our vision for a power system design methodology leveraging modular components to provide customers with high performance, cost-effective solutions and a much faster time to market. Once again, I affirm my prior enthusiasm and commitment to achieving a strategic goal of leading a transformation of the industry toward modular solutions to power system requirements. With our intellectual property portfolio, know-how, and the arrival of cost-effective, high-performance modular building blocks, Vicor is uniquely positioned to make the most of a multi-billion dollar market opportunity. I'm as confident as ever regarding our future. This concludes my prepared remarks, and Jamie and I will now take your questions. Operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. And your first question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Please proceed.
Yes, could you give us an update on the litigation and the movement from October trial to January trial?
So there is a large number of motions pending with the court, and the court decided that to properly address all of these motions, it would need additional time, precisely until the end of October. Because of that, the schedule of trial was reset from in October, an early October date, to sometime in the month of January.
And what were these motions related to? Were these your motions or CinCor motions or both? Or?
There were motions from both. I think the key motions about which the court heard from the parties, and this was several weeks ago, related to a Vicor motion to find certain claims asserted by a competitor to be indefinite and such invalid. Another motion to find the balance of the claims not infringed, and a motion that was brought by CinCor to have our counterclaims dismissed.
What is happening to the CinCor Cisco trial?
The CinCor Cisco trial is progressing on a separate track because the cases have been severed. The order of trial and the timing of trial will be set by the court later this year.
So that's okay. So there's no date on that.
Well, there is no date on either trial. So we will await the decision of the court with respect to both.
Also, given all the news and what's going on with IBM, could you just review with us Vicor's business with IBM, with the data centers and their high-end servers, power architecture, and where you stand and what some of the changes that IBM is going to go through, how is this affecting Vicor?
Well, I think I can comment with respect to that, which is in the public domain. I think we've all seen a recent announcement by IBM to divest its semiconductor business. That step does not bear on IBM's leading role with respect to high-end servers, nor does it stand in the way of a continued opportunity for Vicor with factorized power solutions within IBM systems. So we look forward to further opportunities in the future to enable IBM to achieve levels of power density and efficiency in high-end servers that cannot be achieved with any competitive technology.
And how do you see their data center progress?
I really can only comment in very general terms with respect to the fact that, as we all know, it's a complex landscape. The nature of the kinds of solutions that are being provided to customers is changing. We all know that more and more solutions are going to be and services are going to be provided through the cloud, and IBM, as others, are moving into that space, as well as I think we can all imagine maintaining the traditional strengths with respect to, in the case of IBM, supercomputing platforms.
All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please proceed.
Hey, Patrizio and Jamie. First of all, really congratulations on an awesome quarter. Congratulations to the whole team, actually, because it really is pretty remarkable.
I wonder what you'll say once we start making money again.
Well, the way I look at it, if you take away the one-time fees, you did make money, and the cash flow was up substantially, so that was really nice to see. Your revenue is up, your bookings are up substantially, your gross margin's up, your gross margin as a percentage of revenue's up, and without the legal fees and severance, it looked like you had positive EPS. Is that right, Jamie? Did I read that right?
That is a reasonable inference.
So good job, anyway. So a couple things. Just one question on the legal front. What's the worst case that could happen here? Is the worst case you write a check and you save $3 million a month on legal fees, or is there another worst case? Or?
Well, there's a wide range of outcomes, and I'm not going to get into specifics today, but I will say that I'm as optimistic as I've ever been with respect to a positive federal outcome for Vicor, given the facts and what's come out of our intense discovery process. I think our competitor who sought to interfere with our business in the marketplace by bringing baseless claims, knowing that these claims are baseless, has got a high yield to climb to win against us. And going the other way, we believe we have claims that have merit, particularly counterclaims that have merit. So
okay.
We'll patiently wait for justice to be done.
Okay. Back to the business aspects. Do you expect your bookings will keep up for the next several quarters?
We think so, yeah.
So do you feel like we're at the inflection point now that we've been waiting for?
We have had a recent gathering of our worldwide sales managers, and the outcome of that gathering, which took place a couple of weeks ago, is a milestone that is within reach, that is an early milestone to our 3x5 goal that we discussed in the past. It is a near-term goal that we feel highly confident of being able to achieve in the early part of 2016. And as of that time, without mentioning the revenue level, I will say that we expect to be with high confidence at the revenue level that Vicor has never reached before, and which will represent a breakaway level for us, where in many respects we will be playing a different ball game, not just in terms of the perception by the financial community, but most significantly in terms of the perception within the industry at large. In terms of critical mass on a number of different fronts with a number of different customers and applications.
Okay, and along those same lines, you talked about more expansion. Can you talk about more capacity you want to bring on? Are you talking about a different facility? Are you just talking about more capital assets you can be spending on? Or?
Well, we're going through a process of enhancing our focus and streamlining our operations where appropriate, where rational, as a stepping stone to an expansion phase that will come once we have made greater utilization of our Andorra facilities, within which we have significant room for growth. But we're beginning to look beyond the capacity of primarily a 250,000 square foot facility in Andover.
Okay, and again, along those same lines, there were some ads in the Monster for temporary workers for first, second, third shift, and I heard temporary mentioned also in the prepared remarks. Is that because you see a spike in the business and you expect that to kind of taper down some, or why are these workers temporary, I guess is what I'm asking?
Well, with chip manufacturing, as you can imagine, we're still in a phase where we are going through a significant ramp at a steep slope over a relatively short time frame. Our efficiencies in terms of equipment and automation are still short of what they're going to be. So as we deploy some additional key pieces of automation and tools that increase operational efficiency, the demand for labor content per unit will go down. I just earlier today got an update with respect to some of these initiatives having been completed. So as you can imagine, it's a balancing act in terms of doing what we need to do in terms of supporting the capacity requirement, while at the same time making sure that we're doing it over time in the most cost-effective and efficient way possible.
Great. So what I think I'm hearing from all the remarks and everything is that you expect your revenue to continue to grow, but because of productivity improvements, you be able to either keep the same number of employees or actually trim down a little bit and just improve your efficiency.
Yeah, we expect our efficiency to improve as we get a little further along with the ramp.
That's outstanding. Great. All right, congratulations again. I'm going to jump back in the queue and let someone else ask some questions. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Don McKenna. Please proceed.
Patricio, you mentioned hitting revenue levels that Vicor has not seen before, but I didn't remember hearing the time frame on that. When did you expect that might happen?
Well, what I said is that we expect to be at a level far enough above the level that we've ever reached that it will be perceived not just by the financial community, but more significantly by the market in which we operate as a critical mass. I'm not going to say what that level is. I didn't a little earlier. I will confirm that this is expected to happen at the beginning of 2016 with a very high confidence level.
Is that 2016?
Yes.
Thank you. I also want to ask you, too, going back to the legal issues, have you guys gone through a mediation process required by the court?
Yes, we did.
Okay. I'm sure you're aware John Dillon put out a little research report on the company, and my experience over the years is that people that do that typically run to buy the company first, not necessarily for total concurrence by the company, but the company would typically identify if they thought the person doing the research report was way out of line. Did that process take place?
No.
Okay.
Nice try.
I'm sorry?
Nice try, Don.
Yeah, we're not.
I wasn't asking you to agree with it. I was asking you if he had run it by you first.
No.
John knows better.
How about? Can you give us a quick little update too on the 4A filings that all went through today? What did that all shake out to mean? That you weren't quite able to do all the options that you had originally did last year?
Well, that actually captures it. It was 2013, that we had mistakenly awarded to the three individuals, myself included, for which we had the amended Form 4s. So we took care of the paperwork over the last couple of days to set the record straight as to what options were in fact awarded.
Okay. And if I could ask one more before I jump back into queue, too. I see a lot about the government allowing military sales to foreign countries now, so folks like Raytheon are able to ship some of their Patriot missiles and what have you. Is that going to benefit you?
Well, I think historically we've had significant reliance on defense business. You appreciate that you know, our strategy over the last several years has been to diversify away from defense. That's not to say we're abandoning defense. We are continuing to be a major player. And of course, the density, efficiency, scalability of chips, SIPs, make our products and solutions particularly attractive in applications that are challenged in terms of lightweight, you know, density, which is a characteristic requirement of defense applications. So we're continuing to be a factor there, but we are also very much focused on expanding our business across different markets that may not suffer from the kind of cycle that we've seen in defense in recent times. So we're keen on having a very diversified customer and market base. You know, we're very keen on leveraging a unique technology to achieve not just high performance, but extremely cost-effective solutions that can power not just IBM processors, but Intel processors and memory sockets that are very, you know, cost-driven, but of which, you know, very, very large, you know, quantities get deployed. We think that's key to long-term success in the power system business, and that business over time is going to involve a lot more electronics in automobiles, in particular, than you know, defense applications.
Okie doke. Thanks.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Alan Hicks. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon, and congratulations on a good quarter. It's better than I expected. My question is, in the last dozen years or so, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've spent roughly $500 million on R&D for the various new products you've been developing. Is that correct?
That's somewhat high. we're talking about an order of magnitude which is in that ballpark, but I think as of last count is somewhere between 250 and 300.
Okay, thank you. But so going forward, do you expect to keep expanding at this high level and continue to grow the R&D?
Yes. Our business model is not one of you know, a company that traditionally has operated in the power space with minimalistic investments in R&D. We're not a company that copies other companies' products. We invent, we innovate, and on that basis we command the margins that go with fundamental innovation and invention. So that's at the heart of our business model. That's what has made us successful at various levels at different points in time, but fundamentally going forward, we see that model as the winner in terms of high margins and high level of profitability as we achieve critical mass in terms of revenues and can benefit from the economies of scale that come with that. So our business model boils down to being able to deliver a high-value proposition to customers more and more by way of not just high performance, but a growing level of cost effectiveness with products that can afford relatively high margins, while at the same time support an ongoing investment, significant investment in R&D at the level of 15, 16, 17% of the top line.
Mm-hmm. So you've also made comments in the past about growing revenues, I think it was 3 times in 5 years,
yep.
which would roughly put you in the range of $600 million or so. What kind of, if you're able to achieve that, what kind of gross margins and operating margins would you, what range would you expect?
Well, let's put it this way. With some of our new products, we are achieving margins at levels considerably higher than any Vicor product ever achieved. And I go back to the early going of Vicor with its innovative bricks in the 80s and 90s. And we routinely achieve margins in the 60-65% range. We have products, novel products, which represent a tremendous value proposition to customer. They're very cost effective and yet support margins considerably above that level. That's an essential part of our business model going forward. You know, we've made the kind of investment you alluded to earlier, a little lower than that, but $250 to $300 million. We have, you know, 140 or so patents. We have a tremendous technological capability, and the measure of that ultimately is high margin and high profitability.
I know back in, I believe it was the late 90s, you achieved over 20% operating margins. Do you think that's achievable again?
Yes. Obviously, the electronics industry has matured a lot since those days, and today, as you know, competition in many ways is a lot tougher than it used to be, and many companies have a difficult time. They struggle with that. They don't know how to deal with it. That's not the case for Vicor. We've always known how to compete. We've always known how to leverage our own ingenuity to give us a competitive advantage. And I think what we've been focused more and more over the last several years with the investment we made is in realizing a win-win proposition with our customers, where we enable them to leverage tremendous performance cost effectively while enabling us to recapture a reasonable return on our investment.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and congratulations on the progress you've made.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Dick Feldman. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, guys, and thanks for taking my question, and I hope the progress can continue. I have a couple of questions. The first is, you made reference to new customers and new applications in your written remarks. I wonder if you could flesh that out a little bit more.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but let me give at the general level some example of recent progress. So we had a team just come back from Asia where they reported design activity with design wins for VTMs and PRMs and factorized power solutions in powering Intel processors in applications involving new customers and new kinds of opportunities. So that's an example of progress where early wins are paving the way for more design wins. Another area is microcells. We have a number of opportunities in that general area. I made reference to automotive customers in the past. We have activity going in that general space. So where we are at now is we are harvesting the effort of many years in developing revolutionary new products. These products are coming out, and they're enabling customers to take power systems to a new level of density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness. And with that, we see tremendous opportunities, and we see the opportunity over the next 5 years to really make a difference in terms of changing the way the industry, the power system industry, has traditionally operated. We're seeing it from a number of different fronts.
You said you're okay on capacity right now as far as the chip business is concerned, VR chip. How much spare capacity do you have, and at what point must you look at adding capacity? And as you add capacity, can it be added in small increments, or and give us some ideas to the expenditures involved?
So capacity can be added in increments that would typically represent a significant percentage of existing capacity. That's the logical way of doing it. So a logical increment would be a double-digit increase in capacity, not a few percent, to be clear. I think that high level of capacity can be brought about based on past experiences in a time frame that is consistent with the visibility that we have with a growing multiplicity of customers that we're doing business with. So 6 months to 9 months is a typical time frame for deploying a significant incremental capacity, 30, 40, 50%. More and more we're focused on the scalability of the equipment, the processes, and the ability to, in effect, step and repeat with a quick gather approach what is being deployed in terms of the basic cells that make up our automated lines. To the extent possible, these are pieces of equipment that are standard and can be, procured from our vendors. Less and less, they are unique. But we do have, some fraction of the equipment on the line that, given the unique attributes of our packaging technologies, are needed to enable us to manufacture the product with no or minimal operator intervention. So to the extent possible, we focus on standard equipment. Obviously, for S&D assembly, we use standard S&D assembly equipment. Cells, we use other kinds of standard equipment, but where necessary, we do not shy away from the need to have to work with vendors to make available unique equipment that can be scaled up in terms of copies of those particular equipment choices, and this is all done with scalability in mind. So we have, I would say, a level of maturity in our manufacturing operations that has grown over the years. I am particularly proud of it. We've been able to accomplish a lot, particularly within the last year, with the ability to, step up to capacity challenges or, process challenges and do what's necessary to address the business need. That's, I think, part of the strength of the company at this point in time. It's not just one of unique power processing technology, novel power processing engines. I think significantly it has to do with the ability of the enterprise to deal with the many facets of the challenge. And I think it's that overall capability that gives us the confidence that we have with respect to the growth in years to come.
I wonder if you could give us any kind of guidance as to the financial commitment needed to expand capacity. Is yours a capital spending light model?
Well, that's something else that we've gotten better at over the years. I remember with early generation of products that the relationship between the level of capital equipment needed to support a certain increment of yearly revenues and those revenues, that percentage being a lot higher than we've been seeing with our new generation products. In other words, we're getting better at driving the equipment cost and the cost structure in terms of depreciation, down to levels that make for a relatively short ROI, proposition. So we're not concerned with respect to our ability to finance the growth in terms of capacity over the next couple of years. I think depending on what happens in 2016 and beyond. We can foresee scenarios where we might want to come to the, capital markets to finance the next level of growth. But we're still far away from having to take that step.
Yeah, Dick, it's not like we're going to build a wafer fab. We don't have billion-dollar commitments to increase our capacity and a step function. We have... I wouldn't use your term capital light, but I think it's not inaccurate. If you look at our capital expenditures over the last several years, well, we have established significant capacity for our new chip platform, spending no more than $2 million a quarter in CapEx.
Right. I agree. That's what I was thinking about, and I was thinking that it would not be inconceivable that you could experience both a rapid ramp in volume, and at the same time, you start throwing off lots of free cash.
Yeah, but I think we should also be prepared for a scenario where it might be time to establish a manufacturing presence outside of Massachusetts with a large incremental capacity, essentially an alternate source factory, possibly in Asia. And that step might be aligned with an opportunity in the financial markets to raise substantial capital.
One last question, and that is a question that you raised in the answer to mine, and that is, do you have any issue with customers as to the fact that at the moment the product is unique and you are the sole source?
It is an issue with some customers. It's not an issue with most customers. We are approached frequently, you know, by companies looking to you know, play a role with respect to that. You know, take a license, provide an alternate source. So we are very much tuned in to the issue you're alluding to. And over time, as our unique components get more and more traction in a variety of end markets, particularly with certain end markets where an alternate source or alternate, at least an alternate manufacturing facility would be a must, we would be addressing that issue. So this is something that is very much on our radar screen. It is on the radar screen, to your point, of some of the customers.
Okay. Thanks for answering my questions, and I'll give someone else a chance.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Please proceed.
Patrizio, you said you had a very high confidence level of that 2016 meeting, whatever that critical volume is. Is that, could you give us some insight in why you have such a high confidence level? Is that a pipeline, customers that are queuing up that you see this coming? Another shorter term part of that, given everything and all the momentum you seem to have, I'm sort of surprised that the guidance for only a small sequential increase in revenues in the fourth quarter.
Well, so the fate of the fourth quarter is largely driven by the bookings of the third quarter and leading up to the third quarter. So we are in a certain phase. I think when it comes to the earlier part of your question relating to where does the confidence level come from, I'm going to, in effect, reference the input I've received from the team that gathered to address this issue just a couple of weeks ago. And their conclusion was predicated on the engagements we have with existing customers, with new customers, design in activity, you know, products that have been introduced and are about to be introduced. So it's that combination of inputs that led them to, you know, a forecast with respect to the critical revenue level that that is being referenced, and that's a level that was characterized to be 90% confidence as of Q2 of 2016, with a 50% confidence level of being able to achieve it by Q1 of 2016. And again, this is a milestone that represents a major step forward toward the achievement of the 3x5 that we've been discussing in the past.
It's always been difficult for me and I think for others, and when you make new product introductions and when you started generating revenue from that. And I was taken by your comments on VIA of a very rapid uptake, and I don't know that I've heard you say that before. Could you give us some more insights into VIA and why a very rapid uptake and a little better understanding, you say, now that you have that in the chassis level to go along with the board level?
So that's, I think, an insightful question. And generally speaking, the answer has to do with the fact that, let's take as an example, the designing cycle for factorized power solutions in the past, let's say, with the hand servers. That was a process that lasted literally years, 2-3 years. And I think we all understand why it takes that long, because a customer designing in a board level solution, particularly one that relies on a novel power distribution architecture, has got a lot of work to do, and it takes a lot of vision, it takes a lot of guts, and it takes a lot of time to implement. So some of our products, the ones that are in a way most advanced, particularly board level products, have inherently a relatively long gestation period in terms of designing cycle from early engagement to volume production. The VIA products that you know we're referencing are in a different category because of the fact that these are essentially chassis mount products. They get bolted down on a chassis for mechanical and thermal management. They interface with the rest of the power system by very simple cables, an input cable and an output cable that may distribute 48 volt or some other bus voltage to the motherboard. By their nature, front-end systems of this kind, via products, have a much shorter gestation because, in particular, when customers have a need because their you know existing solution doesn't work or because their solution may not provide the level of power or complement of outputs that they need, they can have themselves of a chassis mount solution with a much shorter cycle time than designing a whole you know board-based you know power system. So having a VIA product capability with the level of density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness that our new platforms provide gives us a new way to engage customers in a complementary solution to their power system requirements, which has inherently shorter designing cycle times. It also plays synergistically with the motherboard, you know, point of load solutions, in that with the combination of VIA products and PRMs, VTMs, either in chip form or SIP form, you know, customers can, for the first time, address their total power system requirements from the wall plug or the battery, from whatever power source they happen to be operating with, to the point of load with a level of synergy and integration that no other company operating in our space is the world with all to offer, either from an intellectual property perspective or from the perspective of you know having the products.
And your introductions in by rapid uptake then for VIA, that product line is introduced, then you should start seeing revenue from reasonable revenue from it when?
Well, I think we're going to be seeing some of these new VIA products go into volume production as early as 9 months from now, which, you know, for our industry is on the short side of the designing cycle. And I'm referencing applications where we already have inroads with our earlier generation PFM, which is not a VIA product. And which is relatively costly and which has relatively lower performance than the new PFM-based VIA product that we're going to be introducing at Telefonica. So we already have interest by some of these customers in that new product.
Just on one other product, your second generation data center product, which one comfort company is customer is ramping up on that. I would think this would be a major enticement for another customer in the same for the same product set. How soon do you think that could be?
It depends on the particular customer and application, but let me put it this way. Just within the last 2 weeks, I've seen two different customers with activity involving the same chips that were scaling up production with at the data center application that you're referencing.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. We might take a last question if there is one.
Your next question comes from Don McKenna.
Jamie, if I did my numbers right, it was looking like incoming orders last quarter were in the range of about $65 million, for about a 1.12 book-to-bill. You mentioned that 67% of the backlog is shippable in this particular quarter. Is that typical?
It's not atypical. I don't mean to hedge. We actually have had a transition, as you may recall, it's for VI chip products, it's been a much longer lead time than we have had with our brick business. And that lead time has been shortened, continues to shorten, and we are looking at a great deal of demand such that we've had pull-ins for the quarter. So the number will actually be better than the 67% reported, but that's common. Turns business is an important part of any electronics manufacturer's quarterly revenue stream.
Okay, thank you. And finally, too, if I may, I know Liam Griffin is a board member, and he's also with Skyworks, which is a very successful company. Do you have a business relationship with Skyworks?
All I can say is that Liam is on our board, and you can ask him.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, good going, too. I really am happy to hear what I heard today.
Thank you. We'll talk to you in the next few months. Bye-bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.